Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, Episode 15, and I'm your host, Nick Ortego. Hurricane Harvey recovery is underway in Houston, but just how will city schools get back on their feet? Plus, Oklahoma now has a record amount of emergency certified teachers. What does this mean for their schools? And a funny mom has a new perspective on school supplies. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. In our demanding world of education, burnout can sneak up on a teacher. So today, we're talking with the author of The Resilient Practitioner, the burnout prevention book for counselors, teachers, and healthcare professionals. Hey everybody, Nick Ortego here, and I'm joined with student data ninja Tyler Cummings of School Status and teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt. Lissa, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Tyler, how's it going on your end?
Fantastic.
You know, I think you're on the road, you were telling me, and we'll apologize to our listeners in advance, you're actually in a school training teachers, so what might we hear in the background?
Well, the bell might ring at any moment. I'm not sure what the bell schedule is here, but I know that the teachers I'm training are doing some lunch stuff right now. So I had a few minutes and I thought I'd help you guys out and do this. But if the bell rings, it's because I'm at school.
Tyler's the man because he can be in the middle of a teacher training and take a break and record a podcast. So kudos to you. We're going to go ahead and kick off the teacher's lounge. And Tyler, I'm actually going to let you start things up because it's a topic that I think we need to hit off the top of the show.
Yeah, you bet. So Hurricane Harvey was just an absolute nightmare. And there's lots of stories coming out of Hurricane Harvey. But one thing that kind of flew a little bit under the radar, maybe, but is just how this Houston public schools are going to handle that. And, you know, we're talking about the seventh largest school district in the entire country.
Right.
I mean, Houston is a massive city. And I don't think I quite understood how big Houston was until Harvey, but it is such a big city and such a devastating hurricane. But seventh largest school district, 216,000 students, over 280 campuses, and you know they don't even know if all of their schools are okay. They haven't been able to get to all of them. There's just no telling what's going on with some of these schools, and not only the schools, but the teachers. You know, some of these teachers have lost their homes, and some of the students have lost their homes. So, the Houston Independent School District, some of the schools are being used as shelters, and you know, how do we have school in a place that's also housing people? What do we do about getting food to the cafeteria? How can we make deliveries? There's all these questions.
Yeah, it's not just can we open the school. It's can we get our kids to school? Can, right, like you said, get supplies? Can our custodians get there to work?
Exactly. So there's all of these questions that we don't really have an answer to just yet. So they're going to, superintendent there has reached out to other superintendents that have dealt with this, like superintendent of New Orleans schools, mm-hmm, to try and figure out how do we handle these sorts of things. But they're going to take until September 11th. So, you know, a couple extra days. They were going to try and start the day after Labor Day, but they're going to try and take it back a couple extra days and see just what's going on with all of these schools.
If they can pull it off by September 11th, kudos to them. That would be really impressive. You know, do you guys remember the guy I interviewed back in episode 10, I think it was, with the big aquarium?
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the Houston School District. His name was James Gibran. And so I was just like, I'm going to email him, see how he's doing, you know? So I sent him an email, and he wrote back to me, and this is what he said. He said, "Hey, Nick, thanks for thinking of us. School's been closed since Friday." This was 2 days ago. So this was actually August 29th. He said, "School's been closed since Friday, and will continue being closed through at least the rest of the week." He says, "I have no idea what the shape of the tank is," referring to the aquarium, "let alone the school. All I know is that a lot of people have water in their homes. No particular charities off the top of my head." I'd asked him about, you know, charities. Mm-hmm. He said, "None of them come to mind," but he said, "Just keep praying about us." He says, "I've been I've been out helping evacuate people with my boat the past couple of days, and I haven't been able to get that type of charitable info. Just ask people to keep Texans in their prayers, and anything they can do is appreciated. He says FEMA's here, all the Texas National Guard's on site, the Coast Guard, Texas Parks and Wildlife, along with other emergency agencies, and they're doing all they can. Thanks again for reaching out. I'm going to try to get him on the show, if I can, sometime within the next episode or two, because I just want to hear, like, what's it like from a teacher's perspective? You know, what's he seeing with his students? You know, I didn't want to bother him. I was like, hey, maybe we can get you on the show in the future, but, you know, he's got his hands full right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, one of the cool things, though, that I think is going to come out of this is that they have also talked about making sure that all of these students get fed. And that's something that, you know, a lot of people don't always recognize, that schools are the best place that students can go to get a meal. And so Houston Public Schools is going to have 3 meals a day for their students for the entire school year, that they've been able to figure out a way to get that to happen. So that is huge.
That's really cool.
It's going to be a huge comfort for those families, especially, you know, if they don't know where they're going to sleep at night. Now, at least we know that my kids are going to get fed.
Lissa, I think you have some information from a neighbor of Texas, do you not?
Yes, certainly not uplifting news here either. Oklahoma has, the Board of Education has just emergency certified over 1,400 people to take over classrooms.
And is that a lot?
Teachers. Oh my gosh.
That sounds like a lot.
So much.
Yeah.
That is huge. I mean, I've taught at schools where we didn't have anybody on staff that was emergency certified, you know, and sometimes you'll get an emergency certification for someone in a foreign language, you know, because they majored in a foreign language, but they never intended to teach, and then they eventually teach, you know. So that's understandable, but no, this is like younger grades. I mean, people in the classroom trying to teach youngsters to read and the basics of their education at, that's a ton.
I'll play the naive person here and say, all right, you know, you can still teach, you know, you and be emergency certified. There's some good emergency certified teachers out there, right? Or are they all like, tell me about it.
Oh, absolutely. I've met some people I've met some people that totally, you know, they should have out of the gate been a teacher, you know, and they realize it later and decide to go back and become a teacher, and they're great. So no, it's not a bad thing to change your course. But I think that many, and the fact that it's called emergency certification means that, like, we have a shortage and we need this person. There's no one else applicable. Yeah. So that's part of it too, is there's nobody applying for the jobs. There's nobody that can step in that, I mean, in the article that I read, it was taking several school districts in Oklahoma that were saying, yeah, you know, I had to emergency certify 3 or 4 this year, and I've never had one before. Or,
right,
you know, nobody else applied.
I mean, that's a good indicator. Kudos to the report that you've got that kind of says, you know, 1,400 in Oklahoma. Here's your sign. Right. I would love to see that in each state. In the entire country, I may have to start digging and see if any of that information is not out there.
Well, and also, I mean, they're up to 1,400 now. So in one day, that board had to wave in 574 in one day.
Wow.
So they're now up to 1,400. This is a growing problem. But in one day, 574 emergency certifications issued is a lot.
Yeah, Tyler.
That's a ton. Yeah.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I was emergency certified in AP Lit and Comp, but that was because the course had never been offered, and I hadn't gotten my certification in that yet, but I got my certification that summer. So, you know, emergency certification, it serves a purpose as long as those teachers go through the certification process and get their licensure, because, you know, you got to have a license to teach. It's not like, you know, these are professionals. We are educators. It's something that requires a license. You don't just let anybody hang out with kids all day. So I think as long as they're going through the proper steps and following up, then great. But if it's just only emergency certification, man, that does say a lot about the teacher shortage, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah, and the article I read, you know, asked the question to several of these school districts of, okay, what's going on? You know, why do you have so many teachers in the Oklahoma area is leaving. And they said their average span of a teacher was 5 to 6 years before they left the profession altogether or left the district. And they said, you know, lack of support, obviously low pay. But another thing that I thought was interesting is administrative turnover is really high in Oklahoma. So they're switching out management, principals, you know, lead teachers that are truly a teacher's first line of support. And so that seems to be broken.
Oklahoma sits in a unique area where it's kind of, you know, it's surrounded by states on all sides. It's not like there's a big body of water. So you've got a lot of border there. And I guess you probably have, you're in a position where a teacher could maybe just jump across the border.
Yeah, and that's happening. Habitat for Humanity, you know, builds homes for people that are working and contributing to society but cannot be approved for a mortgage. And in Oklahoma, Habitat for Humanity just built a house for a teacher. A teacher that has 3 years teaching experience and a master's degree qualified for a home. She's a single mom. And yeah, and she makes $34,000 a year. And
that's just not right.
Yeah. The spokesperson for Habitat for Humanity said this is not what this was intended for, but we're happy to help because that's where we are. And there's lots of charities in Oklahoma that are trying to come out and help teachers, you know, encouraging chambers of commerce or encouraging restaurants and local businesses to give a really high teacher discount. There's lots of, you know, banks that are trying to offer special mortgages for teachers in Oklahoma, private banks of Oklahoma. So there's a lot of people that are trying to step in and help with this, obviously teacher shortage, but also low income. But I mean, definitely it's clear that some are actually leaving the state.
Well, I'm going to change gears because you guys are Debbie Downers.
I know. I'm sorry.
I totally set this up so I get to have the fun. That's what I get to do. But, some folks have probably already heard this, but because we have highlighted Woe Susanna and her rant about school supplies on past episodes, I feel like I've got to highlight Dina Blizzard, who's a comedian, and she's also kind of known as One Funny Mother, who highlights school supplies, but she has a different perspective than Woe Susanna. Woe Susanna was like, hey, school supplies are out of control. They cost a lot. Here's Dina Blizzard's perspective.
I've been noticing lately, when people are doing their back-to-school shopping, everybody's complaining. And my thing is, listen, it is the end of August. I will give you anything to take my kids. I'll get you a yellow binder. I'll get you a red binder. I will tie-dye some shit. You take these kids out of my house, I'll get you whatever you want. I'm telling you right now, if there was a teacher who said, you know what, I need some Tide, I'm gonna get you some Tide. These teachers have been making plans to teach your kids, and you're all complaining about some pencil? Some pencils? I don't want to buy the pencils. Buy the pencils. You wanted some pencils? And you're going to teach my kids all this? I'll get you some pencils.
Anyhow, it goes on and on for a little while. I would like to be the person that's watching her film that. She's walking through, like, Target.
Target, or something. See her walking. Yeah, I've seen that video.
What do you guys think? I mean, that is the other perspective. Yeah, parents are taking the burden of the school supplies, but teachers are going to have to pay for it. What are your thoughts?
I really think that is the larger perspective. I do think the majority of people really do say, hey, I'll help in any way I can. You know, I really do see that a lot. But, you know, it is frustrating. You know, the cost of calculators is frustrating. Or when they need this certain folder that your local stores don't have, that can be frustrating. But I do think, all in all, everybody feels the way, maybe not as vividly the way this lady feels, but I do think that a lot of people say, yeah, I'm happy to help. Because the truth is, a lot of parents that I come in contact with, they actually don't like children. They actually are like, oh, I hate it when my child has a sleepover. I hate going to birthday parties, you know. And then they're like, oh, wait, you like deal with this every day. And I'm like, yeah, I actually prefer children over adults most of the time.
And you're the reason why.
Yes, and right. It might be you.
What are your thoughts, Tyler?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, school supplies, they are it's a pain to try and, like, okay, so my son, when we were getting his school supplies, I had to have a green plastic folder with three brads for putting stuff inside, and it had to be green. I found a black one, and I went to five stores to find a green one. I could not find a green folder, but it said specifically on the list, green. Yeah. So when we got to back to school night and brought his supplies in, I said, you know, hey, it took us forever to find this green folder. And she said, oh, well, it could have been any color.
Right.
Don't tell me that. You said green on the form. Yeah. I found a green one.
That makes a snap.
Are you guys about ready for the bright idea?
Yeah.
Definitely.
We are talking to a professor in educational psychology about teacher burnout. What do you think is the cause of teacher burnout, in your opinion?
I think teachers are required to do so many things in such a short amount of time that they're having to wear so many different hats, and they have to be on 100% of the day. There's no part of their day that they can just, you know, have a moment to themselves. They are entertaining 100% of the day. They have to be dynamic and enthralling 100% of the time, and it's exhausting.
I think that's what jumped out to me, and Tyler, I don't know if you agree. It's like, to a non-teacher like myself, you forget that a teacher does, like, they don't have that moment where they can just kind of, like, look down at their phone or...
Oh, yeah. Now, they're not looking at a windshield at any part of the day.
Right.
No. They're not listening to music or at any part. And there's no... I mean, even when, you know, I like at the end of our show how we ask teachers, you know, what do you do during your planning period, you know? I think I'm the one that contributed that question because, you know, it's really telling because a lot of them say, well, I eat or I grade papers or I go to the restroom,
right.
You know, like because that's what a planning period is. And so many parents and even administrators, you know, sometimes say, well, don't they have a planning period for that? No, guys, there is no planning.
And I think at any other job that's like that, where you have to be on the whole time, you at least have the restroom that you can go to hide for a second. But with a teacher, it's like, hey, can you watch my class? And I'll be back in 45 seconds.
Right. You know? And I do think people that are paid to be on all the time are really paid well for it, except for teachers. And so it is, and they're respected for what they do, except for teachers. And so it is, there's a lot of burnout because it's very thankless and it is exhausting. The children are exhausting. The parents are exhausting. You know, the content is exhausting. The scrutiny is exhausting. And then, so you get done with your day and your face is exhausted. And then you get home and you have to be, you know, somewhat adorable to your family. And then you have to start planning for the next day because there's no way to plan 100% ahead to where, you know, I remember trying at the end of the summer saying, I'm going to have the first 3 weeks down to where, you know, I can then on week two be planning for week four. But it's like you never can stay above water ever.
No.
Yeah. Well, let's see what our guest says about it. Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment wrote The Resilient Practitioner, the book about burnout prevention. He also works as a professor in educational psychology at the University of Minnesota, Dr. Tom Skovolt. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nick.
We really appreciate you being on. Now, you, in writing The Resilient Practitioner, designed it for people, I think, in what you call helping professions, counselors, therapists, teachers, and health professionals. What inspired you to write this book?
This topic developed out of my research, my clinical practice as a counselor and teacher, and also teaching students.
In the world of psychology, Is burnout or whatever you may call it considered a medical condition?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I would say a medical condition. Though Christine Mashlock Burnout Inventory, University of California, Berkeley, has been the leading person for a long time on measuring burnout. The term originally came from Freudenberger in 1974, a New York practitioner, clinician, in a drug treatment program, talking about his staff, and he used the word staff burnout. A lot of times articles go nowhere, nobody reads them, but this term developed 1974 from Freudenberger. I wouldn't say it's so much a medical condition, though I've worked with some Australians on the burnout levels of young Australian physicians. And it's pretty alarming when they've done the mental health and burnout level of the physicians. Part of what the issue is when a person's new in their profession, like end of training or the first years, you really need a lot of mentoring and supervision and help. And so that's one of the things they are trying to do in Australia with these young doctors, instead of kind of a male military style of screaming at them, to really sit down and talk to them about how bewildered they are about seeing patients. Same with new teachers, bewildered by the classroom and the students and what to do, how much effort to give, how much to think about them at night, how much to think about each individual student. The Maslach Burnout Inventory has three different parts. One is really having to do with emotional exhaustion. Another is kind of a loss of caring about your students or starting to get angry at your students. Kind of another sign. Mm-hmm. And feeling unsuccessful.
What can you do to reverse that feeling?
Well, I think there are a lot of different things that people can do. And I have a term that we developed studying experts called boundaried generosity, which is a paradoxical term. Boundaried, so around, you just have some boundaries. That's the term we use, emotional boundaries, other kind of boundaries. But generosity, how do you keep being generous but having limits to it? Another one, Nick, I think is the idea of people developing tremendous numbers of, or a one source of positive vitality in one's life. It takes so much to give to students. Where does the energy come from? Where does the sense of well-being come from? If you don't have vitality, then you can't give. There's a story, a study of nurses in Chicago who worked in a hospital. It's hard work. But the thing that really depleted them, that's a term, was when their personal life had major losses, like a divorce. So they're just devastated. And then they go to work trying to take care of sick patients. That's when people really struggle sometimes.
When we're talking about getting that vitality back, is there any exercise or thing that a teacher or a nurse or anybody in one of these tough professions can do to get it back?
I mean, the first emotion for young professionals seemed to be a lot of anxiety. I don't know what I'm doing. But then after a while, like, I've done this so long, I'm bored with it. The newness gets lost. So one thing is to try to move around to multiple tasks or try other things. Some systems, people can do that, like teaching a new section, a new course. It also is hard work, but it gives a person some sense of excitement. I think paying attention to one's, this is easy to say, hard to do, paying attention to one's personal life to have really things that are very exciting and positive. I know a professor of nursing who does weaving, and when she gets on the loom, she gets kind of in a meditative state. She's so some other place. And you think about what that does for her, then she goes back and teaches these undergraduate nursing students who are just, you know, worried working with these patients. And it's not doing it one semester. A lot of what I'm focused on is how do you do it for 4 or 5 decades?
Right. So if I'm hearing you right, you're saying step one would be maybe if you're a teacher and you teach math, maybe switch to teaching English or science. That might kind of re-energize you a little bit.
Some variability, other kind of tasks. That might be tough to make that big a switch, but I know somebody that's even teaching a different section of, you know, high ability students this fall. So she's preparing a lot, but it's also giving her a sense of excitement.
Is there a tipping point, do you find, with folks who are, they get in such a rut and so negative or burned out, whatever you want to call it, to where there's no turning back? Or do you always feel like someone can rehabilitate themselves?
There's a term called, probably, you know, the golden handcuffs, which is you can't get out of your job because the retirement benefits are coming soon. Like an 18-year military veteran who's waiting for 20 years, or a teacher that's 3 years away from retirement.
Right.
So sometimes people, you know, have to wait and they're kind of trapped in that. I think the term you're asking, is there something to do? But I would go back just a little bit and say, I think when people get bitter, that word bitter is really hard. And then the bitterness comes out towards those students that need the enthusiasm and the sense of hope from the teachers. I think, you know, I believe in the power of counseling and psychotherapy, and it makes a difference in people's lives. It can transform people's lives. So I don't want to just sell my own profession, but, and it always doesn't always work, but sometimes a therapy relationship can help people with, let somebody else take care of you.
So yeah. if a teacher walks into your office and says, you know, I need help, I'm burnt out. Where do you start? Yeah. How does that begin?
Talking about what are the stressful, difficult parts of the job. I think there's one occupational stress scale that I really like, has two dimensions. One is demand and control. So there's high demand, low demand, high control, low control. So when jobs have low control and high demand, they're often described as really stressful. When they have high control and low demand, like, oh, that's a sweet spot. That's like owning your own business.
Right, right.
Yeah. But so I think that would be one thing, is how do you look at the idea of how much demand is there? How much control do you have? Just to use that language. What is wrong? And sometimes there are interpersonal situations, maybe a supervisor, a coworker, that a person's really upset about. You get a new principal coming in, saying this is how we're going to do it. The system is developed externally. So I think there's just some job satisfaction issues. And then another topic would be talking about what is success? How do you define success? Now, there are a lot of external factors and test scores and all that, but, you know, in the helping fields, in different kinds of fields, it's what is success? I talked to a man who is a physician and dealt with stage 4 lung cancer, and ask him how he defines success, because the physician's job is to keep people alive, and almost all his patients died.
Right.
So what is success? So we went to his success is helping, connecting to the patient, working as hard as he can, hoping for good outcomes. But the outcome is a process. So in some ways, I would say to a teacher coming in, there's a process definition of success as much as an outcome definition. And the outcome they don't have as a control of as much, but the process they do, which is their involvement with the kids. And then I would talk about personal life. You asked about teachers. I mean, in that counseling relationship, of course, because of the ethics and the privacy, you can talk about other parts, but what's happening in their personal life?
All right, Dr. Tom Skovolt. The book is called The Resilient Practitioner, and it's available on Amazon.com and probably in a store near you as well. We appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your work, Nick. Yeah.
All right. And do you have a moment? We're going to do the pop quiz. Are you ready?
Yes.
First question. If students could go to school for only one subject, which subject should it be?
Anthropology.
All right. Why is that? You're the first guest that's ever said anthropology.
Probably. You know, it's so unpopular now that I don't know if there are too many people taking it. Because you get a broad sense of culture and perspective. Just think about Iraq. We had bombers. I'm sorry if the military thing is too much for you. But multi-million dollar bombers coming from Mitchell Air Base, I think it was Mitchell, in Missouri, flying all night, bombing Baghdad. Mm-hmm. And tremendous military know-how and technological skills, but we have three major ethnic groups in a country, and there's no understanding of the culture and how these people work together. So it's just getting a bigger perspective on things.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
Oh boy. Yeah, how much time do we have for the answers? Not very long. How to manage failure.
What does every child deserve?
Being loved early and with good early attachments with one or more adults. And I also am also a real strong advocate for more father involvement. There's so many kids, for various reasons, that grow up with without much male involvement in their life.
What do you think the biggest challenge is for today's educators?
The inequality of funding across districts, that it's so blatantly unfair to have a city district that has resources that are one-fourth of a rich suburban district with kids that have four times as many needs in a country that talks about equality.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
A lot more money. More a Finnish approach, which is a lot more money, which then equates to a lot more status.
True. And I think a lot of people listening would probably agree with you. What teacher changed your life?
Oh boy, I've been lucky. I've had different ones. I guess I would say my graduate advisor at Missouri. I took it when I moved there from Chicago to rural Missouri to go to the University of Missouri. It was in this big class, 54 students. I was trying to do well in the master's program to get in the doctor program to get into psychology. It was a long process, so I had no idea what was going to happen. But I did really well in the class, and he was just started becoming a mentor for me. And that was in 1971. No, it wasn't. It was 1969. And 2 years ago at his retirement, I gave a talk. And he'd been working until he's 80 years old. So I started having an advisor, mentor, in 1969. And I think I still have one. I'm 73. How can that possibly be?
That's great.
So, yeah. So I'm just plain lucky with that one. And we'll just stay with that. Joe Johnston, University of Missouri.
Excellent. And last question, pen or pencil?
Pencil, because I make a lot of mistakes.
All right. And again, Dr. Tom Scovolt, we appreciate you taking the time, and hopefully your words and guidance can help some of our listeners out. Thank you.
Terrific visit. Nick,
right.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
That's going to do it for episode 14 of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or a comment, remember that you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and subscribe to the show. And we'd also love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in the words Class Dismissed. On behalf of Tyler with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortego, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed. We'll be right back.